Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UT.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. My special guest on Thursday's show is Stephen Goff, the longtime soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. And Steve joins us from the southern U.S. city of Nashville, Tennessee, where he watched the U.S. men's national soccer team score an impressive 4-0 victory over Ghana in a friendly international match. First off, Steve, welcome back to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Fantastic to join you, Sonny. Always a pleasure.
Steve, who are some of the standout players for the USA in the big win over Ghana?
Well, Gio Reyna scored twice. This is his first camp under Greg Berhalter since their falling out at the World Cup last year. He was terrific. Christian Pulisic was outstanding as usual. And then you saw guys like Tim Weah with some beautiful skills and speed. Fowler and Balogun, the new striker, was terrific, scored a goal. And Sergiño Dest, the right back, who is a better attacker than a defender, was instrumental and influential throughout the match. So, but overall, it was an outstanding performance by the U.S., which scored four times in the first half and put the outcome to rest.
Steve, it looked like the USA fielded a very young team in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, they've been young for the past couple of years. It's an up-and-coming generation that was one of the two youngest squads at the World Cup last year in Qatar. It remains a young squad, and some younger guys continue to be injected into the roster. So, you know, the process of gaining experience, building cohesion and chemistry is the priority as the 2026 World Cup approaches.
Steve, what were the biggest differences you saw in the U.S. team from the 3-1 loss to Germany on October 14th to the 4-0 win over Ghana on October 17th?
To start, you're talking about a much stronger opponent, Germany, which, although it hasn't had any success at the World Cup the past two times, it's still one of the most talented programs in the world. And, you know, you saw it on display, particularly in the second half of the game against the U.S., which ended in a 3-1 Germany victory. The U.S. took the lead, and they looked really good attacking, but they were vulnerable defensively. The Germans figured them out and controlled the second half, scoring twice to earn the victory.
Steve, you mentioned that falling out that Gio Reyna had with Coach Berhalter at last year's World Cup in Qatar. Do you feel like the two have officially mended their relationship?
Yeah, I mean, Berhalter's talked about how it's, you know, it's a process. You know, it was, I think it wounded everyone involved very deeply, and this wasn't something that's going to be quickly put aside. But they seem to be making progress. Gio hasn't spoken to the media since the World Cup last year, so we really don't know how he's feeling. But the fact that he's back in the team and is playing a critical role and playing very well is a good sign. And I think, you know, they are working on their on their business relationship, even if the personal relationship, which went back decades between the Berhalter and Reyna families, is probably damaged beyond repair.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Steve Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, ahead of the USA-Ghana friendly, I read your story on Yunus Musa, the midfielder for the USA, who played 75 minutes against the country where his parents were born. Steve, this broadcast is being heard in Ghana. Can you give our listeners a little insight on how Yunus Musa made his journey to the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah, both his parents are Ghanaian, seeking, a better life. The parents the father went to Europe, ended up in Italy working. He came back to Ghana. He met his future wife. While pregnant, Eunice's mother was in New York visiting relatives. She ended up giving birth in New York. So Eunice was born in the Bronx, making him a automatic U.S. citizen. But he grew up in a small town in Italy as Ghanaian immigrants. And eventually the family moved to England. He played in the Arsenal youth system. And then step by step, his career really took off in Spain. And now he's with AC Milan in Italy. But in the big picture, he was eligible because of his travels and family ties to play for four countries, U.S., Italy, Ghana, and England. He played for England's youth teams, but he decided that he wanted to represent the United States. And so he's played for the U.S. for the past 2 years and 2.5 years, started in the World Cup. But he does have strong roots in Ghana, even though his parents now live in London.
As you mentioned, Steve, Yunus Musa played at last year's World Cup in Qatar. Do you see him as one of the key players for the USA in the future?
Absolutely. He's a young player, gained great experience at the international level in Qatar at the World Cup. He's now playing at one of Europe's biggest clubs, AC Milan, alongside one of his U.S. teammates, Christian Pulisic. He's a central midfielder. His responsibilities are both attacking and defending, but he's got a huge future ahead of him, and he is definitely one of the mainstays of the U.S. midfield.
Steve, what did you think of the Black Stars of Ghana and their performance?
Oh, they were terrible. you have to give a lot of credit to the United States because they were flying. They were terrific. But Ghana was caught flat-footed. They made some terrible mistakes. They were just overwhelmed by the U.S. And to allow four goals in a first half, even in a friendly, is embarrassing, and no matter who you're playing. So they showed some heart in the second half and had some chances, played like they cared, which is a good sign for a team in facing such a deficit. But in the end, they will not be happy with that performance, following a 2-0 defeat to Mexico in a friendly match in Charlotte, North Carolina over the weekend.
Mexico and the USA, do you still see them as the top teams in the CONCACAF region as we head into this next World Cup qualifying cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. There are Canada was on the rise in the last World Cup cycle. Panama has become a good program. Costa Rica is consistently a threat. And Jamaica is a talented squad. So, as the World Cup expands to 48 teams and more teams from the CONCACAF region gain entrance into the World Cup, you'll see their abilities and perhaps their vulnerabilities on display on a broader on a broader platform.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Steve Goff, the longtime soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve is joining us from the southern U.S. city of Nashville, Tennessee. Steve, how would you describe the soccer atmosphere in Nashville?
Well, Nashville's an up-and-coming soccer market in the United States, primarily based on their MLS team, which has been around for a few years, Nashville SC. They opened a new stadium, a 30,000-seater. It's a beauty. And there have been national team games here, both the men and women, and some Olympic qualifiers over the years, but they played at the NFL stadium. Now that this new stadium's in place, there's a, you know, it's a true soccer stadium. So that's really helped grow the sport here. It's done well overall. The crowd was not great. It was, 18,000 or so. It's a Tuesday night against Ghana. Expectations were around maybe 20,000. This is one of those markets in the U.S. that, 10 years ago, you never would have thought would be part of the U.S. soccer landscape, and it truly is.
Steve, what's next for the American men?
Yeah, the U.S. team, all the players go back and join their clubs this week because the international window is closing. They'll play in their league matches over the next few weeks. The next international window for national team games is in mid-November. For the U.S., that means the CONCACAF Nations League quarterfinals. And the Nations League is a tournament played in North America and Central America, as well as in Europe separately. Every year there's a new tournament. So U.S. will play a two-leg quarterfinal. We're waiting the official announcement of their opponent, but it looks like it'll be Trinidad and Tobago. The winner of that not only goes to the Final Four of the Nations League next March, but also qualifies for Copa America, the prestigious South American tournament that will take place in the United States next summer.
Finally, Steve, turning to Major League Soccer, the biggest arrival was superstar Lionel Messi. How would you rate Messi's overall impact in his debut MLS season?
Immense impact on and off the field. With him on the field, they won a trophy and Leagues Cup, and he brought international acclaim to the league. He's probably the greatest player in soccer history, and that's saying something in a sport that's produced players like Pelé and Maradona. So this is a big deal. It's certainly boosted MLS's image. It's boosted their subscriber numbers television wise for Apple TV, and he's been sensational on the field when healthy. He's had a long year, and he's worn down. He missed a few games. Miami was in bad shape in the standings before he arrived. They obviously moved up the standings a bit upon his arrival, but they will not make the playoffs. It was just too far to go. Their season will end this weekend, and they'll look ahead to next season, and barring any setbacks or anything, Miami, even though they didn't make the playoffs this year, will probably go into next season as one of the favorites.
Steven Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, thanks for chatting with us once again.
My pleasure, Sonny, anytime.
The Confederation of African Football, CAF, recently held the draw for next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Ivory Coast. 24 teams were drawn into six groups of four each. In Group A, host Ivory Coast will play Nigeria, Equatorial Guinea, and Guinea-Bissau. For group analysis, Iron Mike Imbonier spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com, Fisayo Dairo.
For me, I believe Group A of the upcoming Africa Cup of Nations in Cote d'Ivoire is a fairly balanced one. Yeah, and make no mistakes about it, we have two former champions in the mold of host nation Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire and Nigeria's Super Eagles. But I'm not going to rule out the possibility of any of Guinea-Bissau or Equatorial Guinea from advancing also from the group. Yes, this is a 24-nation tournament, which means that up to three teams can advance from each group, which means if a team can as much as muster 4 points, then perhaps can find themselves in the round of 16. And yes, it's going to be the meeting of some familiar foes. Nigeria's Super Eagles and the Wild Dogs of Guinea-Bissau were in the same qualifying group, and the Wild Dogs really beat the Super Eagles in Abuja before Nigeria was able to exact some revenge in Bissau. So there's some sort of familiarity among these teams, and then they remain eternal rivals. Nigeria defeated Cote d'Ivoire en route to them winning the competition in 2013, the last time Nigeria have won the title. So it's going to be a reunion of familiar faces in Group A and a rekindling of growing rivalry among most especially West African teams. For the Equatorial Guinea side, the Nxalang Nxenal are also not an unknown proportion in African football and will be hoping to have a say in that particular group.
Some football analysts think that Group A will be tricky and there could be upsets. What's your take on this?
Well, if anyone considers Group A as being tricky, of course I will not disagree, and that's why I consider it as a fairly balanced group. Two teams look to be head and shoulders above the rest, while two teams have capabilities of causing upsets. So should I expect upsets in the group or in the competition? Why not? You know, every soccer competition is capable of giving us shocks, surprises, and upsets in equal proportion. At the last World Cup in Qatar, we saw Saudi Arabia shocking Argentina. And at the last Africa Cup of Nations, we saw teams like Comoros Island, Malawi, the Gambia, and so on, bringing in surprising results. So why not? You know, the Guinea-Bissau have beaten Nigeria in recent times. Yes, Equatorial Guinea have stood toe-to-toe to Ivory Coast in recent past as well. So it's a possibility. If any of these so-called top teams do not play according to their capabilities, according to their abilities on the match day, they stand to be shocked by less fancied sides.
Fisayo, do you think that the Super Eagles can make it from Group A, given the home advantage of Cote d'Ivoire and the Guinea's team in the same group?
Yeah, I do believe the Super Eagles will advance from the group. No excuses whatsoever. Yes, the fact that they are in the same group with the host nation makes it a little tricky. But again, I think they are lucky with the way the fixtures are arranged. They face the Equatorial Guinea first, and they know that they need to start the competition on the high. Once they're able to get the 3 points over Equatorial Guinea, then they face the host nation second before facing Guinea-Bissau in the third match, the way they did when both teams met in Cameroon last year. So I believe the job has to be done from the very first game in that competition. I can't remember the last time Nigeria failed to qualify from a group in the Africa Cup of Nations, how much more when it is now a 24-nation tournament where 4 points you can advance to the next round. Definitely, I expect the 2013 and 1994 champions, the Super Eagles, to advance from Group A.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And Fisayo spoke with Iron Mike Imbonier on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairo, chief football writer at ACLSports.com, and you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Brazilian Football Confederation says star striker Neymar will be sidelined for several months after suffering a serious knee injury in a World Cup qualifier on Tuesday. The Confederation says Neymar tore the anterior cruciate ligament and meniscus in his left knee in the match. The 31-year-old Neymar went down after challenging Uruguay's Nicolas de la Cruz for the ball in the 44th minute of Brazil's 2-0 loss. Neymar left the pitch in tears, and he was on crutches as he left Estadio Centenario in Montevideo. The Confederation says Neymar will undergo knee surgery on a date yet to be set. He is Brazil's all-time leading scorer. Last month, Neymar broke Pelé's scoring record with his 78th goal in a World Cup qualifier against Bolivia. Neymar's career has been plagued with injuries. He spent three lengthy spells on the sidelines with his former club, Paris Saint-Germain. Earlier this year, Neymar underwent right ankle surgery that required 5 months of recovery before he left PSG to sign a 2-year deal with the Saudi club Al Hilal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In women's professional basketball, the Las Vegas Aces edged the host New York Liberty Wednesday night 70-69 to win their second consecutive WNBA championship. The Aces won the best of five WNBA finals 3-1. The star center of the Aces, Asia Wilson, scored a game-high 24 points and grabbed 16 rebounds in Game 4, and Asia was named the finals' most valuable player.
To be up here, this one was special because so many people counted us out. So many people. And for us to stand up here today, and I know they exhaled when we lost too. And it's like for us to be up here right now, it's just God was working through us and he gave us the strength and the power to execute everything that we needed to do. And we are nothing without him.
Asia Wilson and the Las Vegas Aces are the first WNBA team to win back-to-back league titles since the Los Angeles Sparks in 2001 and 2002. Las Vegas forward Alicia Clark comments.
It's historical, right? Like, there's a reason it hasn't been done in that long of a time period. It's hard to do. It's hard to get to the finals multiple times. You know, I've been around this league long enough. I've been in rebuild years. I've been a part of championship teams. You never know when you're going to get this moment, when you're going to get this opportunity, regardless of what team you have.
Aces head coach Becky Hammon had this to say about the team's consecutive championships.
This one's sweeter. It just is. It's harder to do. We went from darling to villain real quick. We had our names, our good names, slandered. And all these women did was lock in together. And you ask why I'm so confident? It's because I know exactly who's in that locker room. I know exactly who I'm going to war with every day. This is the tightest. This is one of the probably the tightest group I've ever been around. Mm-hmm. And they're a special group. I don't know what else you can throw at them. I don't know what else you can throw at them.
Facts, because we've been through some stuff this year, man.
And they didn't say nothing. And it's hard to not say nothing when people are lying about you. And all we did is buckle down and keep playing. And that was our mantra, keep playing.
Becky Hammond's coaching counterpart for the New York Liberty is the Australian Sandy Brundello.
Yeah. Look, I mean, of course we're disappointed. Yeah, it's tough, too tough to win a fourth. It would have been nice to go and play again five and then lay it all out on the table. But, credit to Vegas. They were down. They found a way. And, we fought, but it wasn't our best game today. And, it'll be a hard one to learn from. But in the end, I'm proud of this group, of what we've accomplished and how we have come together as a totally new group and trying to build the chemistry and the togetherness, and they committed to what we wanted to do. And we've got to learn it as take it as a learning experience now and as we move forward and remember how it feels and use it as motivation.
New York Liberty basketball coach Sandy Brundello. The Liberty lost to the Las Vegas Aces on Wednesday night, 70-69. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to the Aces, the WNBA champions, for a second year in a row. Rugby World Cup news. The head coach of defending champion South Africa, Jacques Nienaber, says he'll go with the same lineup that eliminated host France in Saturday's semifinal against England.
When we had the selection meeting as a coaching group and with our selectors, there was lots of discussions. But at the end of the day, we felt that there was everybody that played on Sunday had a proper performance, you know, as an individual and as a team, they played quite well together. So looking at that, we decided to just go for continuity. There was no injuries from a medical point of view. There was no injuries to anyone. So from a performance point of view, there wasn't any reason to change. And from a medical point of view, there wasn't any reason to change. So we decided to keep it the same.
The Springboks coach also sizes up England.
Like I've mentioned last time with the French team, they've got they got a unique kicking game that they employ. The same with the English team. I think they're a team that's comfortable not playing with the ball. I think if you look at them, I think they're the team that kick the most. And they like to suffocate and strangle you, kick the ball in your half and wait for you to make, apply pressure there and wait for you to make a mistake. So we, from a tactical point of view, we know what's coming our way and we must just make sure that we execute on the day. So, yeah, that quality team, we obviously know them even through the Premiership games that they play, and a lot of our players play in the Premiership. So while following our players, we kind of see their performances as well. And but I think if you look at our back row, I mean, it's the same one that started in the World Cup final in 2019. I think they all on form, and they're also playing well, you know. So I think that's going to be a nice matchup. If from back row perspective.
Saturday semifinal is a rematch of the 2019 Rugby World Cup final in Yokohama, Japan, where South Africa beat England 32-13. The Springboks of South Africa edged France 29-28 on October 15th in a thrilling quarterfinal marked by its physical intensity. But as we heard from the box coach, the South Africans emerged without any injury concerns. Argentina will play New Zealand Friday in the other semifinal. The 2023 Rugby World Cup final is scheduled for October 28th at the Stade de France near Paris. And that wraps up the October 19th edition of the show.
I get it.
Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.